Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 85, Chapter entitled Lord Krishna Instructs Vasudeva. Text number 11. Bhutanam,
Bhutanam,
Asi,
Asi,
Bhutadir,
Bhutadir,
Indriyanam,
Indriyanam,
Cha,
Cha,
Kaijasa,
Kaijasa,
Vaikariko,
Vaikariko,
Vikalpanam,
Vikalpanam,
Pradhanam,
Pradhanam,
Anushayiyam,
Anushayiyam.
Bhutanam asi bhutadir,
Bhutanam asi bhutadir,
Indriyanam chataijasa,
Indriyanam chataijasa,
Vaikariko Vaikariko vikalpanam,
Vaikariko vikalpanam,
Pratanam manushayinam,
Pratanam manushayinam,
Bhutanam asi bhutabhi,
Bhutanam asi bhutabhi,
Indriyanam cha taijasa,
Indriyanam cha taijasa,
Vaikariko vikalpanam,
Vaikariko vikalpanam,
Bhutanam manushayinam,
Bhutanam manushayinam,
Bhutanam asi bhutabhi,
Bhutanam asi bhutabhi,
Indriyanam chataijasa,
Indriyanam chataijasa,
Vaikariko vikalpanam,
Vaikariko vikalpanam,
Dhanam anushayinam,
Dhanam
anushayinam,
Bhutanam
of the physical elements,
of the physical elements,
Asi,
Adi,
you are,
you are,
Bhuta Adi,
Bhuta Adi,
their source,
their source,
false ego in the mode of ignorance,
false ego in the mode of ignorance,
Indriyanam,
Indriyanam,
of the senses,
of the senses,
Cha,
Cha,
and
Taijasa,
Taijasa, false ego in the mode of passion,
false ego in the mode of passion,
Vaikarika,
Vaikarika,
false ego in the mood of goodness. Vikalpanam,
Vikalpanam,
of the creative demigods.
Pradhanam,
the unmanifest total material energy.
Anushayinam,
underlying.
Underlying.
Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. You are the false ego in the mode of ignorance, which is the source of the physical elements. False ego in the mode of passion, which is the source of the bodily senses. False ego in the mode of goodness, which is the source of the demigods. And the unmanifest total material energy, which underlies everything. Translation responsibly. You are false ego in the mode of ignorance.
You are false ego in the mode of ignorance.
Which is the source of the physical elements.
Which is the source of the physical elements.
False ego in the mode of passion.
False ego in the mode of passion.
Which is the source of the bodily senses.
Which is the source of the bodily senses.
False ego in the mode of goodness.
False ego in the mode of goodness.
Which is the source of the demigods.
Which is the source of the demigods.
And the unmanifest total material energy, which underlies everything. Can you just give me a brown jumper? Should be just there somewhere. You are the one indestructible entity among all the destructible things of this world, like the underlying substance that is seen to remain unchanged while the things made from it undergo transformations. Text 13. The modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, together with all their functions, become directly manifest within you. the Supreme Absolute Truth, by the arrangement of your yoga maya. Vasudeva's description of how the Supreme Lord expands himself into the products of the three material modes may possibly be misunderstood to imply that he is touched by the modes, or even that he is subject to destruction. To negate these misunderstandings, Vasudeva states here that the three modes and their products function by the arrangement of the Lord's creative energy, Yoga Maya, who is always completely under his control. Thus, the Lord is never tainted in the least by any material contact. Omagyan timanandasya ginamjana shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati sva padantikam vancha kalpata rubyascha kripa sindhu bhivacha patitanam avanebhyo vaishna vibhyo namanamaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So although Krishna creates this material world, Krishna himself never directly comes in contact with the material energy. It's an important point to understand. Some people think that when Krishna comes in this material world, he is a product of matter, or he is covered by matter, or he is subject to illusion or maya. So Krishna himself makes a comment on these personalities within the Bhagavad Gita. What does he call them?
Fools,
yeah, he calls them Muta. Muta means ass. It's quite a strong insult. In terms of Vedic culture, it's a very strong insult. These days, people will say anything at any time. Just like, you know, you're in the car park and you back your car out and you didn't see another car and you almost hit it. And a guy beeps his horn and he winds down the window and he just says anything to you. Yeah, no, these days people just say anything at any time. You could hear it anywhere. It's not even so shocking because you just hear it everywhere. But back in the Vedic times, you know, people don't just, you don't just say anything any time, and you don't say an insult in public like that. It's considered to be very insulting like that, to insult someone in public or to raise your voice or to call someone an ill name. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says they are mudha. It's a great insult to them. Krishna is saying they're asses. And say, you call a human being an ass, that's a great insult. You're an ass. Muta, like that. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you think that as God, when he comes to the material world, he is in any way contaminated by the material energy, then you are muta. You are an ass. Krishna says, now that's how ignorant you are. Now what is the nature of the ass? He makes a lot of noise. And he likes to hear his own voice. This is basically the problem in this world. Everyone likes to hear their own voice. Just like in the morning, or anywhere. I mean, you just go into, sometimes, you know, I used to get on the tram to go in for Harinam in the city, and you have to listen to all the verbal garbage, or the prajalpa, which the people speak on the tram when you get on. Because they just like to hear the sound of their own voice. So they just talk all this nonsense. And I never did it, but sometimes I felt like standing up, because I always sat at the back of the tram and just make an announcement. Anyone who is talking nonsense, please be quiet. Because what they say is usually quite nonsensical. So this is the nature of an ass. He likes to hear his own voice. So he just speaks and he speaks and he speaks. But actually, he's just absorbed in his own false ego. And he's just absorbed in his own mind and so forth. So Krishna says, they may say so many things, they may have their opinions, but they are just asses. If they think that he is contaminated by the material energy when he comes into this material world, they are asked. That is a great confusion. Now, Krishna himself does not come in contact with the material energy because he allows his Maya Shakti, or his Shaktis, to come in contact. Just like, by the grace of Krishna, by the grace of God, we also have been invested with certain Shaktis. Just like the sense of smell, right? Now, because Krishna has given us that sense, we don't have to physically touch, right, the sense object to perceive its aroma, right? There's a sense of smell, right? That is Krishna's Shakti, that is energy he's given to us. Because Krishna has it, he's also given it to us, right? It's also there. So we can perceive it. There's no contact, right? But we can perceive, oh, there's an aroma there, right? So this is how Krishna deals with the material energy. Through his Shakti, he deals with the material energy. Material energy is separate from him. He never contacts it. So therefore he's never contaminated. Anyone who says Krishna is contaminated, that is, Krishna says they are mutta. Right? He's God. How does he become contaminated? Right? He just does it through his energy. That's how powerful he is. He can do everything through his energy. He doesn't need to do it. Just like you want to get something done, you've got to go and do it. Go wash all the pots in the pot shed right now through your energy. Right? Done. Right? You know, that's Krishna. Krishna can just get everything done. Right? Universe manifest just through energy. Right? But we cannot do like that. We have to physically do something. That's the difference. But Krishna is powerful. Therefore, he can do everything through energy. So Krishna says, if you think that I'm contaminated, right, you are mutta. You are just a fool. How can I become contaminated? You don't know how powerful I am. Krishna is actually powerful. So where does this energy come from? It comes from Krishna. The Brahma Jyoti, you see Krishna has this Brahma Jyoti, this effulgence around him. What is that effulgence? What is that effulgence which is around him? That divine halo. Whenever you see him, there's an effulgence. What is that effulgence?
Butterflies.
What's that?
Glowflies.
Nice try for the boy from Wollumbar. Any other attempts?
It's his aura.
Yeah, it's his aura. But what's that? What I'm saying is, what is it made of?
Light. Light.
Yeah, it's light, like that. But what is it specifically? Analyze. What is it? What's that? Yeah, the spirit souls merge into it. So they're also within it. But what is it originally? You don't have to think about it. Just take rest and you don't have to think about it. You know, we don't have to be interested. We can just look at Krishna for, 20 years and just say, oh, it's a nice effulgence. But what is it?
Spiritual energy.
Yeah, it's his energies. There's all these Shaktis emanating from him. That's his power. He has so much energy that he has a halo. Now, there's energies, right, coming from him. Unlimited. Parashya Shakti, Vividhaiva, Suyate, it says within the Vedas, within the Upanishads. He has unlimited, Parashya Shakti, means unlimited energies, just coming from him. And it says, in the end of the 10th canto, it says that whenever Krishna, by his Jnana Shakti, by his Shakti of knowledge, whenever he examines himself and examines all of his energy, and when he perceives everything about himself, right? At that moment that he perceives everything, the next moment there is more. So then he perceives what that is. And at the next moment, there's more. Yeah? So Prabhupada says it's not correct to say that God does not understand everything about himself. But when he doesn't understand everything about himself, he understands there's more to be known. So in the next moment, he perceives everything about himself, but then he understands, oh, there's more. And then at the next moment when he perceives that, he understands, he is so powerful that every time he understands himself, he just realizes, I'm more powerful than what I, you're more powerful than what you think. He is the origin of power. He is the origin of energy. He is the source of all Shakti. He's Shakti Man, like that. So this is Krishna. So when he creates this material world, he simply does it through Shakti, or through energy. So he glances at the material energy. So the material energy is in an unmanifest state. That is called?
Pradhan.
Pradhan means unmanifest. It means all the elements are within the sum total of the material energy, the pradhan, but they're not activated at this point. There's no differentiation. So there is 24 material elements, and they're all manifest, and they're all there. Something like a lump of clay. Right? All the elements are there, and the lump of clay is there, but there's no variety or variegatedness. So Krishna sees that pradhan, and he glances at it by his shakti. Just by his eyes, he can activate it. Prabhupada also explains to us that just like when we offer the bhoga to the deities, right? The plate is put before the deities, and Krishna can taste everything through his eyes. Right? He can just look at the offering and then he can taste. Oh, tomato chutney, cauliflower, saffron halva, like that. Everything is just done through the eyes.
Angani yasya sakalendriya.
Yeah. So it means through any of his senses, Lord Brahma says, he can do the function of all the other senses. Prabhupada also explains that when you ring the bell during the offering and you chant the mantras and you invite Krishna to please come and take the offering, then through hearing, Krishna can also taste. He hears your prayers, you're offering the bhoga, he can also taste through his hearing. He can gulab jamuns. Samosa. Tamarind chutney. We can't even perceive it. We can't even understand all this. How powerful could you be? You know, if you want to taste something, there's only one sense organ which can perceive taste. Right? You can get the khichdi and you can rub it all over your ear. But it's not the same, right? Especially when it's hot. It's not the same, right? Doesn't matter what you do, it's not going to happen, right? You have to. There's only one sense which can perceive it. But how powerful is Krishna? With any sense, he can do the function of all the other senses. Krishna can't impregnate someone. We can only impregnate someone with one sense, with our genitals. Krishna can impregnate someone just with his eyes. That's what he does to the material energy, right? He impregnates like that and brings it to life just by looking at it. That's how powerful Krishna is. So he impregnates the material energy. He looks at the material energy and he brings that to life. And by his shakti, by his glance, then everything becomes manifest. The 24 elements separate. Right? They become separate and they all begin to go into motion and they all begin to take on their own individual qualities. And then pradhan becomes prakriti. It becomes material energy, nature. And then Krishna can begin to develop universes and so forth. So it says here that when he first looks at the material energy, then it says the mode of ignorance is the source of the physical elements. The physical elements means, what are the five Mahabhutas which Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita? Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. All right. First one is, which one comes first?
Ether.
Right. So ether means space, right? It's what's all around us. But that element can only be perceived through sound. We know it's there because sound bounces off it. That's why sound carries, because it's bouncing off the ether. Right? That's why we can hear like that. And then from that element then progresses
air.
So air, you can hear air when it blows, you can hear the air. And what is its other quality? Touch. Then touch manifests. Right? Then next one is
water.
Fire. So fire, what manifests with fire?
Form.
Yeah, you can see it, right? You can hear it, right? You can touch it, you can feel it, right? But you cannot taste it. Right? So then the next element manifests, and what is that?
Water.
Water. And then you get?
Taste.
Right? You can taste it, you can hear it, you can touch it, right? But you cannot?
Smell.
Right? And then you get earth, which has all of the qualities. Right? You can taste it, right? Tastes good. Here's some mud. Right? So taste it, smell it, right? Hear it, touch it, and what's the other one? Hearing it, yeah. You can do everything, right? With earth you can perceive it with all five senses. It's the grossest of the elements. So this all comes when Krishna glances, and false ego, the first thing when he glances, the first thing which his glance touches is false ego. And false ego covers those five elements, right? And then those five elements, then they manifest like that. The five elements come from Krishna's glance in contact with the false ego. Krishna's glance in contact with the false ego and the mode of ignorance, then that brings forth those five elements. Now, Krishna's glance in contact with the mode of passion, what does that contact?
The senses.
The senses, yeah. Now, how many senses are there?
Five.
How many?
Three.
How many?
Ten.
There's ten senses, right? There's the Gyan Indriya and the Kam Indriya. Kam means?
Desire.
Yeah, they're different. Karma. Not calm, but work. Yeah, or active. Right? The active senses, the senses that we use for karma, for activity. And then there's the Gyan Indriya. What is the Gyan Indriya? Senses we use for acquiring knowledge, to learn things, right? So the Kam Indriya senses are the
limbs.
Yeah, the limbs, the arms, right? They help us, right? The legs, right? The anus, the genitals, and the tongue for speaking. That is the Kam Indriya. That's how we work. That's how we do our activity. Right? So this is in the mode of passion. False ego in the mode of passion contacts those five senses and brings them to life. Right? And then the Gyan Indriya. What are the Gyan Indriya?
Eyes, ears.
Yeah, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the skin, and the... What's the other one?
The tongue,
yeah. So those five, right? That is the Gyan Indriya. Gyan Indriya means how we acquire knowledge or how we perceive everything which is around us, right? So through those five, then we get perception of what's around us. That's how we know. We know, okay, we're in a room. We can see it's a room. We can hear it's a room. We know someone's just walking through that door over there, right? We can smell that there's incense in this room, right? This is how we perceive knowledge. That all comes. That's through false ego in contact with the mode of passion. And then false ego in the mode of passion also brings forth intelligence. Because you need intelligence to
make sense.
Yeah, to work everything out, right? To put everything together. Right? If you don't have intelligence, you can't work out how to put it. You see people who are born in situations, they have certain diseases. Just like, what is the one sometimes the people have? You know, sometimes they take the children around. They have, yeah, like Down syndrome, or they have some like limited limitations like that. So their intelligence is not functioning, right? They have the body, they have all the elements and everything, but the intelligence is not functioning, so they can't put things together. They can't work out how to do things, right? You can teach them things, but it's very hard for them to perceive them because the intelligence is not functioning. So intelligence is coming from the mode of
passion,
or false ego. It puts everything together. And then Krishna glances and false ego touches goodness. You know? And then what is manifest from false ego with goodness? The devas, right? The demigods. And then also one other element of the 24.
Mind.
The mind. Right? The mind manifests from the mode of goodness.
So the mind originally is in the mode of goodness. That's why everyone is so caught up, especially these days in Kali Yuga, everyone is so caught up with wanting to make the mind peaceful. Because that's the nature of the mind. It's meant to be peaceful. It's not meant to be agitated or disturbed. The nature of mind in its original form is in goodness, right? It's not like a disturbed. It only becomes agitated by contact with the modes of nature and the sense objects. And then our minds become all disturbed. And then you see people get very agitated minds. You know, in Kali Yuga, practically every second person. No, it's more than that. It's everyone, really. Right? Everyone's mind is just disturbed, right? But that's not the nature of the mind. The mind is actually meant to be peaceful. That's the nature of mind. The element is of goodness, right? It is meant to be peaceful. But the nature of minds in this day and age is that everyone's mind is very disturbed. Practically, you don't meet anyone who hasn't got a problem. You know, practically everyone, you know, I can't think of really many people that I know who haven't got some mental disturbance. You know, how are you doing? Yeah, pretty good. But then when you just go a little bit deeper, oh yeah, but you know, this and that, and then, you know, this happened to me yesterday and that happened, and you know, she said that and he did that, and then just minds are disturbed. But it's not the nature of the mind. So, when Krishna glances, then false ego in the mode of ignorance, false ego in the mode of passion, false ego in the mode of goodness, it brings all of these elements together. And the devas, the demigods, are also constructed from the mode of goodness. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out in one of the previous purports that without the permission of the particular demigod who is in control of the particular element, then you cannot use that particular function. Prabhupada explains that there is a demigod for everything. Just like for blinking. Right? If you want to blink, the demigod in control of blinking has to give you permission. What is his name?
Blinky Bill.
Not Blinky Bill. Not Blinky. I didn't bother. Blinky Dave. Bill is not Sanskrit. You're in the temple, you have to say Sanskrit. Right? So if you want to blink, if you're having trouble blinking, then you have to worship the demigod in charge of blinking. How many demigods are there? 33 million. 33 million. And each demigod has 100 assistants. So how many is that?
3.
Yeah, 3,300 million. There's 3,300 million devas, which is actually not that much, because Earth has 6 billion humans. Right? So it's actually not that much. 3,300 million. That's only one third of India, right? India's got a billion, right? Yeah, so it's only... It's approaching that.
$3.3 billion,
so it's half of the Earth planet. It's about half our population. Yeah, India's 1 billion, like that. Yeah, my calculations are out. I think so. So it's about half of the Earth planet. There's not that many demigods, actually. Right. The positions are actually quite exalted. Right. It's not easy to become a demigod. But they are in charge of all the functions. And if they say no function, right, on behalf of Krishna, if they say no function, that's it. Just like in Australia, we have had drought for 7 years. Right? Indra says no rain, no rain. That's it. Right? Taps are turned off. That's it. No rain coming from heaven anymore, right? Because too much impiety. So that is the function of the devas. They are born from the mode of goodness, and their function is to keep the universe functioning in order. Now, in terms of the modes of nature, we're studying in the third canto of the Bhagavatam in the Bhakti Vaibhav course. Then Kapila Dev explains that devotional service can also be performed in the three modes of nature. Sometimes devotees have this misconception that we are doing devotional service, therefore we are transcendental. Right? Sometimes we have this perception, we are transcendental. Right? If you're so transcendental, why are you still attached to the opposite sex? You know, you can say, well, I am transcendental, I'm doing devotional service. Then why are you attached to the opposite sex? Why can't you control your tongue? Why do you fall asleep all the time when you're chanting your japa? You know, if you're so transcendental, why are you affected by the three modes of nature? So Kapila Dev says devotional service can be performed in the three modes. Right? You can do devotional service in the mode of ignorance. You can do devotional service in the mode of passion, which we see a lot. And you can do devotional service in the mode of goodness. Right? So what are some of the symptoms of someone doing devotional service in the mode of ignorance? Offending devotees? Yeah. Yeah, it's true. What's that?
I don't do
the
properly.
Yeah, don't do lethargic.
Lethargic,
yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Sleeping,
yeah.
Resting the body.
What's that?
Resting the body for Krishna.
Yeah, resting the body for Krishna a little too much. You've been resting your body for Krishna for about 8 hours now, probably. And it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, what else?
Anger,
yeah. When we're angry, you know, some devotees, they're angry. They get angry at devotees all the time. Mm-hmm. That it's a mode of ignorance, and it's not funny. It's a mode of ignorance, and it's devotional. Yeah, okay, they're performing some sort of devotional service. There's something connected to Krishna in their activity, but it's not going to be progressive. Kapila Dev points this out. You do devotional service in mode of ignorance, mode of passion. You'll only go so far. There's limitations, right? You won't transcend, put it that way. Sometimes we think, oh, we're doing devotional service, we're all just going to go back to Godhead. No, it's not like that, right? It's a science. And that's why Prabhupada says, nectar devotion is the science of bhakti yoga. It's a science. It's not just, you go, you know, just do whatever you want. You know, I took prasadam this morning and I said Hari Bol 6 times, you know, and I've got tilak on and I know how to fold a dhoti. So, you know, and I go out of it, and then I go back to the spiritual world. Yeah, it's a little bit more involved than that. You know, it's a science, right? And if you want to achieve the result, then you have to perform the experiment properly. Just like in science, you have a hypothesis. Right? Hypothesis means this is what will happen if you do it. Right? This is what we hypothesize. This will be the result. Right? It's a prediction of what will happen. But then you have the method. The method means, okay, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do that. Right? And then you get the objective. And the objective is the result or what you're trying to attain. So devotional service, as Prabhupada points out, it is a science. So if you're doing it from the mode of ignorance, in other words, if you're always angry with other devotees and always, if you think, oh, I'm doing devotional service, okay, yeah, obviously I offend people and people don't like the fact that I'm angry and people don't like the fact that I yell at them, you know, every second day and, you know, I just, you know, stomp around the place, I can do whatever I want and everyone's just got to just put up with it, you know. No, actually, it doesn't work like that, right? It's not pleasing to Krishna. Understand that point. Mode of ignorance, devotional service, the mode of ignorance is not, okay, Krishna accepts it, but he's not that pleased with it. Right? Imagine the spiritual world. Right? If we let all the mode of ignorance devotees back into the spiritual world. Right? There's your garland. You know? You know, cooking the offering. And I'll burn it, you know. Well, you're just gonna have to have it, right? It's the best I could do today. Right? I'm controlling my mind today. It doesn't work like that. Krishna doesn't need that kind of service. That's why he let us all go. And he said, okay, if you've got a problem, if you've got an attitude problem, okay, I'll give you another place. You go there, you work yourself out, right? When you're feeling better again, come back.
Time out.
Yeah, time out. Krishna says, go and work yourself out, right? Go to the pink room. Right? You work out all your problems, and when you're pacified, and when you're settled, then you come back. Right? Then you can behave. That's why the material world is not an eternal damnation. God doesn't put us into hell forever. You know, what sort of a philosophy is that? You know, I mean, if they're trying to sell religion or theology these days based on this doctrine that there's an eternal damnation, I mean, such an insult to a rational person's intelligence. You know, you come to earth, one birth, right? And then some Jehovah's Witness comes around, or, you know, whatever religion comes around, you meet them once, and they say, do you believe in Jesus? And you say, you know, get out of here, right? And because of that, then you've got to go to hell forever. That's God. That's God, right? He creates us, and all the ones who say, you know, yes, I promise I'll be good, right? You go back to heaven forever, right? And all the ones who say, you know, in one lifetime, you got one chance, right? And you didn't buy a book from a Hare Krishna, right? So you're going to go to hell forever, right? I mean, what sort of philosophy is that? This is what people are signing up for. Right? Just like no brain philosophy, right? Not even thinking things through rationally or logically. But for devotees, there is a very rational science and reasoning behind why everything takes place. So devotional service in the mode of ignorance means that devotees will be angry too much like that. It is not pleasing to Krishna. It does not work. It does not give Krishna satisfaction to the heart. And then there is devotional service in the mode of passion. What are some of the symptoms of devotional service in the mode of passion?
Over-endeavor?
Yeah.
Imbalance?
Yeah.
Always in a hurry?
Always in a hurry? Yeah.
Over-attached
to the results. Very good.
Chanting in trance?
That's in the third canto.
Lusty.
Yeah, overcome by lust. Yeah, greed. That's good. Yeah, so it means that when you're doing devotional service in the mode of passion, you know, primarily, and it actually mentions anger again. Devotees in the mode of passion become angry too much as well. And because they're frustrated. You know, everyone's got to be done like this all the time. You know, if you're not ready, they become frustrated and become angry. It's not good. It's not a good mood for devotional service. It means that too much attachment to fruitive results, actually, in the name of Krishna consciousness. You know, we have to distribute that many books, and we have to, you know, do that, and we have to do this, and we have to do that. It's like all just fruitive, right? So it's got to have this big result, big result, big result. But then life is not so much about... life is not so much just about the result, it's about the journey while you're getting to the result. What's your consciousness on the way? Okay, I distributed, you know, 10,000 books this year. But, you know, on the way, you know, I was so passionate to do it, you know, I offended a lot of people on the street. I made a lot of people negative towards the Hare Krishna movement. I offended a lot of the devotees, I put a lot of the devotees down. You're in my, you're not distributing enough books, right? You know, I made, you know, developed the whole attitude. Well, total separatist is another. Kapila mentions this. You're a separatist, right? You can't work with the other devotees. I'm just doing my service, and I'm focused at, like that. This whole attitude, right? That's not pleasing to Krishna. Okay, what you do, the results pleasing to Krishna. In fact, the books are going, that's pleasing to Krishna. But the whole methodology in doing it, the passion or the ignorance, that's not pleasing to Krishna, and that will not allow you to elevate into the spiritual world. So it's important that we understand the science of devotional service. The mode of passion and the mode of ignorance will not allow us to go into the spiritual world. About devotional service is too much covered by those moments. So therefore, Lord Kapila, he mentions that devotional service must be conducted in order to get the full efficacy or the full result. Then you have to perform devotional service. Practice devotional service from the platform of the mode of goodness. What are some of the symptoms of devotional service in the mode of goodness?
Peaceful.
Yeah.
Very regulated.
What's that?
Regulated.
Regulated. Yeah, that's very good.
Steady.
Steady.
Humble.
Yeah.
Consistence.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, nice qualities. So this is some of the symptoms of devotional service in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada has said that he expects his followers to perform Herculean tasks. In other words, Prabhupada did stimulate the devotees' competitive desire. He did stimulate their nature to achieve big things in the name of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. It's like Prabhupada said, I have a disease. My disease is that I cannot think small. Now, Prabhupada was sitting on a park bench in New York City in 1966 with this gentleman who he used to meet on the park bench sometimes. He used to just come for walks to this certain park, and Prabhupada used to walk in this certain park. And Prabhupada used to sit on the park bench and speak to this gentleman on a regular basis. And this person told the devotees many years later that the Swami used to sit on the bench and tell him, there are hundreds of temples, and there are thousands of followers, and there are millions of books, but only time separates us. And that gentleman used to think, well, Prabhupada is very ambitious and he's very like that, but I don't think it will happen. He's just an old Indian man who's just sitting on a park bench, and he has all of these aspirations, but he said, I don't think it will happen. But then Prabhupada, he knew it would happen. So Prabhupada had that nature. He expected us to do the same thing. He wanted each one of us to achieve even more than he achieved, even though that's not possible.
Interesting point. Do you look at the film The Secret? Film that Prabhupada knew The Secret.
Yeah, except the secret seems to be missing the singular point of theism, which is the difference between our philosophy and their philosophy. Their philosophy is that you desire. Prabhupada said, when he was leaving this world, Prabhupada said, you can pray to Krishna. Krishna, if you desire, then let Prabhupada stay. So that, yes, Prabhupada was positive, but he was not. He wasn't atheistic. That's the problem with that philosophy. It's atheism. So, Prabhupada had that. So it's not that we're not supposed to achieve. We should achieve things in Krishna's service. We should have goals in our mind. Just like I remember when I was a devotee, like when I was 21, many, many, many years ago, when I was young, I used to think, okay, when I'm 25, I want to be like this. I want to achieve this. When I'm 30, I want to achieve this. When I'm 35, I want to achieve this. When I'm 40, I want to achieve this. So as devotees, we should have those kind of goals and aspirations. And we should want to achieve great things, big things, for ourselves and also in our preaching. We should want to do big things in Krishna's service. You know, we should have many, many, many aspirations and goals. But the way we conduct ourselves to achieve that, that should be done in the mode of goodness. Right? Devotional service must be practiced in the mode of goodness. Because Prabhupada points out, mode of goodness is a springboard to pure goodness. Right? You can't springboard to pure goodness. You know, we all think we're just going to go back to Godhead. You can't springboard to pure goodness, go back to the spiritual world for the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. That's not possible. You know, I'm just like, you know, mode of passion. You know, you run down the back of the universe. Right? The universe is 311 trillion miles long. You run down the back, and mode of passion means, okay, there's the spiritual world, 311 trillion miles away. I'm just going to run into it. That's mode of passion. I'm going to do it, man. Right? You're just like, carrying along, and Krishna's just sitting there playing his flute, and he just says that, he says to Radharani, here comes another one. Right? Powering in, right? So we're getting closer. We're just about to hit the edge of the universe. I'm just going to power through it. And what does Krishna do? He sends Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva is Kshetrapal. Kshetrapal means he protects the holy Dharma, right, from unqualified people to enter. He's in charge of the material energy. Shiva's in control of this whole thing. His wife is in control of the whole thing, Durga. Right? He's Maheshwar. He's the great controller. He's the master. He's the lord of false ego. So you just run, and then you get to the end of the universe, the coverings, you just go like that. No entry. Right? You cannot pass. No one shall pass. Right? No one can pass. You can't get in. Right? If Shiva says stay, you cannot pass. Right? There's one story in the Mahabharata where Indra approached Shiva. He didn't realize it was Lord Shiva, but he approached him. And Lord Shiva was sitting there, and he took the form of a golden young boy. Right, so Lord Shiva was sitting there as a golden young boy, and he had beautiful girls around him, and they were playing dice. And as Shiva was playing dice with the girls, there were tears dropping from his eyes, golden tears. And when the golden tears dropped, they would fall into the river which was next to him, and they would turn into lotus flowers, golden lotus flowers, and they'd float down the river. So Indra was further down the river, and he saw these golden lotus flowers floating down the river. He thought, where's this coming from? So he goes up the river and he finds this young boy sitting with the young girls, and he's playing dice, and the tears are falling from his eyes and laying in the river and growing and going. And he said, who is this? So he says, yeah, stand, arise, who are you? Like that, this is Indra, right? Carries a thunderbolt, like king of the gods, powerful personality, really powerful. Who are you? Arise. Right? The boy didn't even look at him. Just kept, you know, rolling the dice. Like that. And then Indra became angry. Arise! Right? And he started walking forward towards the boy. And the boy just looked at him. And Indra froze. Couldn't move. Right? He's trying to get to him. Just completely locked up. That's Shiva. That's how powerful Lord Shiva is. Right? Just locks up Lord Indra. And he just laughs. Lord Shiva just laughed and he just said, you know, so many of you Indras have come like that. You know, you all think you're so powerful. You know, nothing like that. So this is our situation. So if you want to get back into the spiritual world, you have to become very humble. And then you go to Lord Shiva and you pray to Lord Shiva and say, Lord Shiva, please. And my desire is to serve Krishna. My desire is to serve Lord Chaitanya. Please let me go back into the spiritual world. And if he gives blessings, the attitude is right, the devotional activity is right. If he sees, right, mode of ignorance is gone, right, mode of passion is gone, right, mode of goodness is there, right, devotional service, sincerity is there, right, then you're a sincere devotee. Okay, go past. And then we may get back into the spiritual world. But it's a science, right? If you don't follow the science properly, you don't get the result. That's the point. So these modes of nature are there, and it is important that we follow devotional service according to the modes of nature if you want to get back into the spiritual world. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
I read in one of Hare Krishna books that certain foods lead to mood of ignorance and passion, such as
unbalanced.
Yeah. But I don't quite understand it. I don't understand how they lead to mood of ignorance.
Yeah, like that. Because Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that there are certain foods in certain modes of nature. So, onion and garlic, onion is in the mode of ignorance, and garlic is in the mode of passion. Because when you eat garlic, you see that it heats the body and stimulates the body. And it stimulates the sensory system, the nervous system. So people become more passionate, right? Just like, of all the countries on earth, which country eats the most garlic?
America.
Yeah, Italy. Right? And what are they like as a race?
Fire.
Huh? Mode of?
Passion.
Passion. Right? You just see them. They have more cars in that country than they do people. I'm serious. Huh?
Famous Ferrari.
Yeah. Ferrari is just mode of passion. Yeah. The only bit of goodness in the Ferrari is the fact that they built it so well. Yeah, that's the mode of goodness. But it's just a pure passion machine. Now you're getting that Ferrari. Huh? Yeah, I mean 90% of them are red. Right? You get in the Ferrari, just turn it on, it just goes. Have you ever got in one? Right? You just go and get in one and just turn it on. And as soon as it turns on, you just think, oh my God. Like, you don't need that much power. You know, I just want to go down to the shop and get some milk. Yeah, you turn on a Ferrari, it's like. Right? You just touch it and it goes. Yeah. Goes from 0 to 100 in like 2 seconds. You know, like, okay. Get out, get the milk. get back in, you know. Go back to, you know, from 7-Eleven back to here. What's the point? So if you eat garlic, you will want a Ferrari. Now, do you want to hear about onion? Onion is in the mode of ignorance because it means it is too pungent. Just like when someone eats onion, you can smell it, you know. They can be in the other end of the tram. But if they had onion last night, it's ignorant, you can smell. And for someone who's in the mode of goodness, for someone who only takes food in sattva, which means Hare Krishna devotees should take food in the mode of sattva, as soon as you use onion or garlic, you can smell it like that. And if someone, like if sometimes someone offers you something and they use some flavouring or something, and on the bottle it says spices, usually when it says spices, quite often it means there's some onion and garlic. And as soon as a devotee tastes it, it just might have a trace, but immediately you know, oh, there's onion or there's garlic in that. So onion, foods in the mode of ignorance, well, they will slow you down and they will make your consciousness more base. So the point is that we don't want to stimulate ourselves too much in the mode of passion. We want to be peaceful so we can chant and we can do our devotional activities. And we don't want to get into the mode of ignorance, those kind of foods, because that will also slow us down and make us, our consciousness not clear. Mode of sattva, or the mode of goodness, means that the consciousness is very clear, very peaceful. And if you're not in that mode by what you eat, then it's very hard to concentrate on Krishna. So that's why we have to avoid those kinds of foods. Is that okay? Any other?
How can we change to perform devotional service in the mode of goodness?
You have to associate with those who are more in the mode of goodness. So you need to associate with the more senior devotees, like that. You see, some of the senior devotees transcended the lower modes. So you try to get that kind of association, people who have transcended the lower modes. And you follow the practices of the mode of goodness. And what is the first practice of sadhana in the mode of goodness? Yeah, you have to get up early. That's the devotion service performed in the mode of goodness. If you get up late, you're already in passion and ignorance. You know, your whole day changes, your mode changes, the way you operate the whole day changes, like that stuff.
We'll finish this later.
Yeah. We'll finish this later. I'll see you outside. Any other questions or comments?
Like in certain things, like, do you require more passion in certain devotional practices? Like if you are doing physical devotional service, if we think about just the goodness, we can never achieve very effectively or efficiently. So, we don't think so. We require a bit of more passion as well.
Don't think what?
We require a bit of more of passion as well.
Yeah, but it's control passion, that's the difference. It's the example is given in the Bhagavatam in the second canto and the third canto of Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma says in the Bhagavatam that he took up the mode of passion to perform creation. So it's true that if you want to do some service that requires a lot of energy, then you have to use the mode of passion. But the difference is that an advanced devotee does not allow himself to be overcome by the mode of passion. He uses it like as a tool to perform his service, but he doesn't become controlled by it. He doesn't get allow himself to be overcome by that mode. That's the difference. So he's still in the mode of goodness himself. But to do the service, he used the passion for a point in time. Just like down at the farm on the weekend, we had to do some rendering and we had to do some like work like that. So it was a long day. We started very early in the morning, finished late in the day. And we had to use the mode of passion to get it done because it required a lot of energy, a lot of work like that. But it's not that we want to stay in that mode. It's not that we get up the next day and we just want to work. Yeah, you just see all these people in the mode of passion. Like, if you go now over to the Westgate Bridge, right, there's all hundreds and hundreds of cars all lined up going, just mode of passion. Why do that every day? Get up every day and just work until you, you know, go home and you're so tired and just, you know, watch television for an hour and fall asleep. You know, what's the point? You don't want to live your life in that mode. But you can use it sometimes to get some service done, that's okay. What do you mean by consciousness?
Consciousness is awareness, okay, what I'm doing is right or wrong. Sometimes we just carry away by association. So different devotees, different kind of devotees, different kind of friends.
Yeah, so it means as you become more advanced as a devotee, then your priority becomes devotional service. So everything you do is in relation to your devotional service. Just like, what is the most important service that each devotee does every day? Chant 16 rounds. That's the number one service. Why? Because the spiritual master gave that to you. He said that was the first service. Right? At initiation, you don't take a vow for anything else. That's the only one you take a vow for. So that's the first service. So when you become a more advanced devotee, more serious devotee, then everything goes in priority. That's first. Right? Those rounds are first. Right? And then all the other things, right? Those rounds, my deity worship, right? My study of the Bhagavatam, my hearing, my chanting, like that, the different things like that. And then you come down to the less important priorities. Okay, I've got to work, I've got a job, right? But that's not your main thing. So sometimes the less advanced devotees, they become more, put more emphasis on the less important priorities. And it's also very difficult because the nature of this society that we're living in, the greater society, is that it's not conducive for devotional service because all the priorities are out of this. Just like Jagannath and Prabhu, you know, Jagannath Ram. So he takes the Bhakti Bhai Bhav course. He's one of our students in our course. So the job he has is that several times a week he has to get on a conference call to America, which starts at 10 o'clock at night. Just like last night we finished the class, like at 9 o'clock. And then 10 o'clock, he has to wait until 10 o'clock. From 10 to 11, he has to go on a conference call to America. This happens once or twice a week. Like, that's not conducive for devotional service, right? I said, give me the phone, I'll speak to these guys. You know? Let him take rest so he can get up and chant his rounds, right? And are you chanting your rounds? Those guys, you know, ask them, are you chanting your rounds? What's your priority? Right? So all their priorities, it's very difficult for devotees, for the grihasthas, to balance their devotional service because there's so much imbalance in modern society, so passionate. Like that, so it's difficult. But for devotees, we have to somehow mould it all around. So follow the examples of the advanced grihasthas. There's so many nice grihasthas in our community, and so many of them are very advanced devotees, and they're also materially they're very capable. So follow their example. That's okay. Any other questions, comment?
We have to work our senses for Krishna. So suppose we are engaging in like hearing and reading and chanting, but we should not be carried by the mode of passion. So how can we engage our senses in Krishna consciousness so that we cannot be carried by the mode of passion and mode of goodness? So give some tips like.
Means that you have to have regulation. Regulation means that if you want to read Prabhupada's books, one problem devotees have, they often come and say, is that I don't have enough time to read Prabhupada's books. Right? All devotees say that. I don't have enough time to read Prabhupada's books. That's because you're not regulated. Right? If you regulate your life, you'll have time. Right? You've got to make time. You gotta find, you gotta regulate your life. Okay, I'll sleep this much, I'll eat this much, I'll go to work at these times, right? That, but you make time every day, right, to regulate yourself so you have time to do all of your devotional activities. I can chant my rounds properly. You know, not chanting them on the clicker to the tram all the time. Okay? You can chant, but I mean, if you're chanting like that every day of the year, you know, then how far is your japa going to go? How much advancement are you going to make? If that's your japa, then, you know. You know, so you have to make priorities like that. It's very difficult. You know, you have a new kid, you know, your child's only, you know, 2 months old, and you're not getting any sleep at night. You know, and your boss wants you to go and work 10 hours a day, and you know, you have to spend time with your wife, and you have to do the shopping, and then you have to pay your bills and like that. And then you also have to chant 16 rounds of read Prabhupada's books, and you know, it's like, what a life. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I moved to the farm. Right? It's too complicated in the city. Okay. So you have to somehow try to balance things as much as you can. So you have to become regulated. Right? You have to become serious. That's the devotee. Just be practical, that's the point. Be practical. Sometimes there has to be some compromise like that, but be practical, that's the point. As much as you can.
Chanting beads is very practical in this world, so we can chant in flickers or click something or in hand, that's okay.
It's not as good as chanting on beads. It says in the scriptures you should chant on Tulsi Mala. Doesn't say on clicker clicker. It says on Tulsi Mala. So you should try to arrange your life in such a way that you chant on Tulsi Mala. Right? If there's some reason why it is difficult, right? Just like if you're living in a Muslim country, right, you might want to chant on a clicker. Like that. There's sometimes you may have to, you know, maybe some greenhouses have their clicker. But you shouldn't chant all your 16 rounds on the clicker. You should be chanting rounds. Usually if you're using the clicker, it means the rounds are not so attentive. So you should try to avoid the clicker as much as possible. Sometimes, okay, you know, difficult, but Tulsi Mala is best. It says that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that if you chant in front of Tulsi Devi, your chanting gets 10,000 times more benefit. Right? If you chant in front of Tulsi, then you get 10,000 times more. So Tulsi means Tulsi Mala also. So if you chant on the Tulsi Mala, you get 10,000 times more benefit than your chanting. Sounds good? Yeah. Better than clicker. No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's better than clicker. More benefit than clicker.
Probably, like, on one hand, he was just trying to spread the glories of Krishna, and on the other hand, like, the materialistic society, they are coming up with all sorts of books and movies and shows to actually ridicule the concept of guru, ridicule the concept of God, and all these things. So, as a devotee, should we raise our voice? Or should we keep quiet, saying that that's how the material society is, so, and I'm a spiritualist, I have nothing to do with the material society?
No, we should preach. We should preach. That was Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada's mood is we should preach. Just like, I think it was Hansaduta Prabhu. That's one of the devotees, I think it was Hansaduta. Then he had a whole ongoing debate with one scientist in a newspaper in one of the countries in Asia. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but you see the Prabhupada Lilamrita, and Prabhupada was very happy. You know, 1 week this scientist would write a whole article saying there's no God, and then Hansaduta the next week, he would write a whole article and give it to the newspaper and they'd print it, And it was saying, you know, all the arguments why there is a God. And then the scientists would write an article the next week, and there'd be a big debate. And it was going back and forth, and people were reading the paper, and it was getting a lot of publicity, and Prabhupada was very happy. He said, yes, we will tell them. We will smash them. Life comes from life. Tell them, can they make one mosquito? Prabhupada was giving him to do all these arguments. Tell them, can they make one mosquito? They cannot even make one mosquito. Life comes from the soul, it does not come from chemicals. So Prabhupada was pushing and pushing like that. So we should preach, that's our motto. We should fight against Bollywood. That should be our motto. Any other questions or comments?
I was told that the big
thing from
the Jagannatha,
we
shouldn't chant on it,
but
go through it.
Should not what?
We shouldn't chant on it, the big
thing from
the
Jagannatha. Yeah.
And we shouldn't go through it.
Yeah, the big bead represents Krishna. And the 108 beads represent the 108 principal gopis. Like that. So as we're chanting, we should not chant. We're chanting, the point is when we're chanting towards Krishna. That's what we should be thinking while we're chanting. I'm going to Krishna, I'm going to Krishna. Right? And then we get to Krishna, but we don't chant on the Krishna bead itself. Because it represents Krishna. Like that. So then we go back like that. So okay. Any other question or comment?
I was wondering what the relationship was between the Purusha and the material energy and the one that lies in the
What's the relationship between the avatars?
Yes,
there's three different Purushas. There's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, and Karanadakshaya Vishnu, or Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu is the one that lays in the causal ocean, and from him all the universes come. And then he enters into each universe as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and he lays down in each universe. And then from him comes Shiradakshaya Vishnu, who enters every atom as Paramatma. Like that. So that's the basic principle.
The one that
material energy, Mahavishnu. Yeah.
And then afterwards,
yeah, it's a little hard to understand at that point because it doesn't seem clear. He either glances within himself, because all the universe is said to be within his body at that time. So he either glances within himself. Sometimes it says he glances at something external, and sometimes it says he glances within. Both things are mentioned, so it's a little hard to understand what happens at that point. But it seems that he glances within, and then he stirs the whole thing up, and then it all comes out from his body like that. So that's what you're asking?
Yes,
yeah, we last year in the Bhagavad-Gita course, we went through all those chapters where it's all described, and we went through it in great detail, but it's very hard to work it out in Zach. So it's something like that. Like that. We'll never actually understand it fully, because you can't actually see what happens because no one's around. You know, when it says Pradhan, no one's ever seen Pradhan, because there's no one except Krishna there when Pradhan is created. When Pradhan is stimulated, there's no one else there. So the only way we're going to understand Pradhan is by hearing about it. No one actually ever gets to see it. So what happens at that point is a little hard to understand. Sometimes the Bhagavatam says he looks within, sometimes it says he looks without. So it's something like that. Okay, we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki.
Yeah.